really mean fast user switching. I think we all know, but just for reference, it's like typically the thing you use at a home computer or with your laptop. If your girlfriend wants to like use your laptop, you really don't want her to like use your account, and Firefox also completes everything. So you want to be able to like even look in your cache where you find all your passwords. There's an interesting Mozilla bug about that, by the way, where some girl actually sent a mail saying, "You ruined my relationship because I found all the like secret porn passwords from my boyfriend." That was from Windows, by the way. They don't have a good separation that they've been used to, at least between different users. So that's one very strong motivation if you want to like run Linux and GNOME on your laptop. You want fast user switching basically to work. If friends come over, you want to give them a guest account. So that's the one half I want to talk about. The other interesting part is multi-seed, which fewer people probably know what is. So just for reference, it's when you attach like more than one monitor to a system and you have like several people. It looks like it's separate computers, but it's actually the same. It's very popular in the third world, where computers are obviously expensive, software licenses as well. And there's some interesting applications if you want to attach remote displays like they do in Sunway, where it's basically a very thin client running, and you have thousands of these, or maybe only hundreds, I'm not really sure. And you have one giant server and you maintain all the software. But these two items, fast user switching and multi-seed, are kind of related. It's all about running several desktop sessions on the same system. So most desktops today have a pretty clear separation of mechanism and policy. Those are two kind of difficult words to deal with. What's policy, what's mechanism? So if we zoom in a bit on the GNOME desktop, most of the distribution ship in GNOME basically ship a system like this. This is very simplified. So you have your Linux kernel here, you have Hal, UDEV, and you have dbus, which basically runs in the system context. There's no user logged in, and these things just run providing mechanism and service. Oh, someone is popular. Oh, and then you have your desktop session running on top, where you have a lot of policy agents that like looks, oh, you don't have a lot of battery left, I'll better suspend your laptop. That big GNOME power manager. You have GNOME volume manager says, hey, someone plugged in a USB stick, I'll also mount it for you and import all your pictures. And all this happens kind of automatically. And it also like respects users' preferences, so you get a lot of nice dialogue, so you can actually easily configure it using the UI, for example. For removal of drives and media, you can just go in and like basically change your settings, which is kind of different from a few years ago. Everything was basically system wide. You had to let you go in and edit a file in Etsy and pray that it worked. So that's kind of where things are moving. Everything is all the policy, all the decisions to shut down your computer, suspend it, or mount removable storage originates from the desktop session, where we have per user settings, so that's all taken care of. So if you look at it from a bit, if you combine these two things, it's the same. It's about making sure you can run multiple desktop sessions without them having to interfere with each other. This is kind of a whacked out diagram, but it's kind of an extreme use case. So if you have one seed, this would be one monitor and keyboard. You might have two desktop sessions running. This would be me. This would be my girlfriend, for instance. And only one of these sessions are active because we only display, there's only one monitor, obviously. And we have two USB ports. And each of us is running like a set of policy daemons to enforce the policy that we decide we want to do because it's a user setting. Might have another seat attached where there's another person running KDE, I think. So he's running his own set of policy daemons as well. And he has another USB port. And this seat shouldn't be able to use devices from here and so forth. That's some of the problems. And might have a remote seat where you have a display and it uses X, and maybe you even have crazy things like USB ports in this thing, and you somehow want your programs running on this system to be able to use these USB ports. So that there's a lot of work we need to do, a lot of problems to make this work. So basically the first thing is to ensure that the policy manager and inactive sessions don't really enforce policy when they're inactive. So an example before, we had GPM running in the inactive session. So the session that's inactive, GPM is sitting there, no one is using the system. I'll just suspend it because that's the default. It's just the same default to install. I mean, not using your system, we should save power, save the planet, and basically suspend. So that's the one problem you want to address. The other problem is that of device ownership. If this guy plugs in a USB device, only he should be able to see it, most probably. Users on other seats, other consoles, should not be able to use those devices. So we need to be a bit smart about that. It involves some system configuration. You have to somehow say the third USB port on this system belongs to this seat, and so forth. There's also a set of features you might want to add if you do fast user switching. So I'm sitting with my laptop, my girlfriend says, okay, I need to like browse the internet, and I don't want her to use my cookies. So at the same time, I'm listening to music, so I probably want that music to stop when my session is switched away from. Which means that Rhythmbox or Banshee needs to be smart about things and at least provide an option to like pause the playback of audio or video when they switch away from. So we don't really have any infrastructure for doing all this. Well, we have some infrastructure, but I'm going to argue it's not what we need. So basically, William Jen McCann been working a bit on this, and he announces his project Console Kit just last week, which is supposed to be able to track seats and sessions. That would be like these objects. So it's a very lightweight framework for doing all this. So it basically has these two primitive objects, a seat and a session. I said earlier there's some infrastructure in Linux today. It's basically called Varlog WTemp or Varlog VTemp, and it tells you what users are logged in at what consoles. But it's not really distro independent. It's distros configured differently, and if we want to put these features in Rhythmbox or Banshee or even an upstream GNOME, we need some kind of abstract interface that's the same on all distros and possibly the same on other operating systems. So basically, these two objects. And the seat is just a console. It's a monitor, it's a keyboard, maybe a set of USB ports or whatever. And there's an object called session, which is also straightforward. It's every time you log in, a new session object is created. So the nice thing about Console Kit is that if you recall the architecture back here, and basically the way it works today is that GNOME Power Manager says, I need to suspend your system, so it calls into HAL. The problem we have today, we don't know a lot about that caller. We know his process ID. We don't really know what session he belongs to because there's no good abstraction for that. But with Console Kit, we can actually learn a lot about the caller. and which session he comes from. So the plan is that using ConsoleKit help him somehow look up in a file or make a debug call in ConsoleKit and say, oh, this guy is from session 2. Session 2 is inactive, so I'm going to refuse to suspend the system. So that's a very useful feature. That'll solve the problem of policy daemons like suspending your system when they're inactive. The same with device ownership. We'll be able to track in HAL. I don't know how much you know about HAL, but I can, maybe I should run the, run this dreadful program I wrote a few years ago. So this is basically what HAL exports. It exports a lot of information about the various hardware you got attached. So if I plug in a USB key, it will basically appear in this. So it's a very simple API. It's all key value based. So the idea here is to, we know what USB ports belong to what seats. So we're just going to add a new property here. You can see this is all key value pairs. So we're going to have a property called info.seat saying this device belongs to this seat. So if anyone tries to, if I plug in a USB key, if anyone tries to mount that USB key, it will deny access to it unless they're running in a desktop session belonging in that seat. So that's a pretty easy way to solve the device access problem as well. It all relies on setting an environment variable in your desktop session called XDG session cookie. That's a bit technical, but basically it's a secure way of knowing what session the caller on Dbus belongs to. It's all in the ConsoleKit announcement that John wrote, which I have a link to. And once you have ConsoleKit, it's a simple Dbus-based API. I'm just going to go over the, it's not the full API, but it's very simple. It's basically, if you have a Unix process ID, you can get the session object for that. And you can learn about what seats are on the system. And seats can be added and removed. If I'm connecting with a thin client, then that'll be a signal saying seat added. This is in Dbus, so anyone can just listen on Dbus and learn about this. Similar with seat, you can get the number of sessions for each seat. So if I have 3 users doing fast user switching, this get sessions will return 3 objects. And similar, the signals. And if the session changed, you can just hook into Dbus, get a signal. And that's very useful. For the desktop, it means we have a very simple abstract interface. And the same for session. So active change is something that Rhythmbox or Banshee wants to hook into. So they can basically say, oh, I'm no longer active. Maybe I should pause my playback. And this is simple. This is, you can write a patch to Rhythmbox to do this in, I don't know, 50 lines if it's C. So we're hoping once ConsoleKit comes out, people will start adding features to media players, to IRC clients, and so forth. The implementation, though, would need to change. I mean, the way Linux currently works in virtual consoles is that we do a lot of mode switching. So it's difficult to show on the projector, but you probably know if you switch from X to the first virtual console, control alt F1, there's a lot of flickering and it takes half a second. If you switch back, it takes like 2 seconds. So ideally we want fast user switching to be like a spinning cube, all the other good stuff. How that's gonna work out, I don't know. I hope some Excel people are here, because I'd love to like, hey Keith, because I'd love to pick the brain about how to composite the output of multiple X servers onto the display. Thank you. I was actually every time I mention this to to Adam Jackson, he's like 2.5 cubes away from me. He keeps running away. So.
Cool. That's cool. Yeah. So. So keep stuff that's gonna happen. So, but. So we basically want the console event space to be just as simple as a shell there. So it's a very abstract high-level interface. So implementation right now in Linux, we track virtual console changes. And once we get on the X-plane, I mean, that's not going to work at all. But it's good we can change the implementation. We don't have to create the interface because the interface is so simple. And that should hopefully work out. Maybe it'll change a bit, but then we'll just pass the application to new one. So that's basically... So what's planned right now, this is pretty new stuff. I mean, we're starting to think about it. But how well, at least optionally, because people do use Hello and all the CMA know, and I don't see fast user switching happening on like a personal Windows device. Maybe on OPC, I'm not sure. So there's a lot of subject change. There's a lot of work needed. We do plan that we'll have to make this happen in Fedora 7. And enable the fast user switching method by default. There's a lot of other work that DDM changes. I think to have probably want to have the base browser by default. And that's a lot of work, but this is something I talked to John about over the last few months, and he finally announced console kit. So this might be the way it's going to work. But I'm not sure, I mean, join the list, some names. That's basically all I have to say about this. So any questions?
Yeah, you said that in control kit, each system belongs to a set.
Right.
How could you able to make sessions migrate between different things?
Yeah, that's a really... That's
because, I mean, in the Sunray example where you had a whole bunch of IP connected sets, you want to be able to go pull my smart card or whatever out of one, walk in on one, plug in, and bam, your session comes straight back.
Yeah, so the question was, can you migrate a session from one seat to another? And I don't see why you shouldn't be able to do that. The control kit API probably needs changes to do that, but there's a host of other problems attached to it. What happens if you're using a device at one seat, then you migrate to another seat? You need to revoke access, and that's a whole other kind of thing. But yeah, it's an interesting feature, I think. And I hope that the console did work, that people will start building thin clients that way. But I mean, thin clients and doing some way style stuff is difficult in the first place. So console kit is just an API that will expose this to some of the system services running and also to the desktop apps. But in the future, if it's working, if it works, then having it come to the API should be straightforward, I think. So, other questions?
Yeah. Do you have any plans to share applications? As in, like, you mentioned to me, can you imagine a situation where you have an application and although you want to actually switch to using the automated language application, do you have any plan for that? And if you are, can you run with
that? Okay, so the question was sharing applications between sessions, I think, and possibly between teams. That's pretty nice. I love that feature. I don't see how. Yeah, sure. I mean, it would be nice to put some programming and control kit for that, but it's a hard problem to do regardless. And people can experiment with it using the instrument. But it's not really related to control kit. Control kit is only an API that makes these applications to actually do the right thing and then run them in such a system. So.
Is there
any type of climate concept just talk about how it works? So the question was, so the question was, any work going on to make this work, but other difference than known. The question is, yeah, sure, of course. It's basically to get the call of this working, you just need to pass your login manager to set an environment variable, and knowledge of that environment variable basically defines membership in a session. So that's how we can deny service to applications. And with this group start picking those up, I mean, if they only pass DDM and they don't pass KDM to do this, I mean, all the stuff running in KDE using help, it's not going to work. Yeah. And it's a fairly simple patch, so I expect this to do that. And there are a few KDE people, actually quite a few KDE people that have a list, and they all think this is a good idea too. So it's definitely cross-desktop in that sense. Making sure that the applications that policy managers don't suspend the system when they're active, it's not going to require patching any applications, it's only going to require patching with a data manager. So yeah, definitely it's going to work transparently and maybe just as long as you patch with a data manager. So, any other questions? No? Okay, thank you.
Probably bad. We can't get the DVD recorder to read it. Somebody jostled the power while we were trying to stop it. It reads it for a little bit and then sits back out.
We have
a DVD tape. This is the DVD tape.
It's got support for volume fade, it's got support for editing, it's got support for effects, and various other cool bits and pieces. That's the plan with 0.9. And the development's running pretty quickly. If you're interested in Python, you want to come and join us, by all means, come and join us. But where it's really interesting is where we're looking ahead. At the moment, all this work has been about matching what we've, you know, what our competitors are doing, what Audacity is doing, what Ardo's doing, what Cubase is doing. And this is where picking GStreamer really makes a lot of sense. First thing, continuous save. As I mentioned, those of you who were in here yesterday, saving is a bind, and it's something we want to get away from. And we've got this idea of having a save marker. So you'll have a slider. And you'll be able to slide it along to go through your version history. Everything in Jocosha is completely undoable. That was one of the feature requirements of when we started out, unlimited undo. The idea of embeddable lyrics, you know, we've got our Jocosha file format, which is just basically a pretty simple XML file format. And the idea that you can save other bits of information in there as well. Something called mixed down profiles. This is something that we've been particularly interested in doing. When I record Lug Radio, right, I record the show, and then I edit it together, and then I have an MP3 at the end of it, a really high-quality MP3. I then send that off to Matt Revell. He then encodes it into three or four different formats with Lane. That then gets uploaded to a server, an RSS feed gets updated, some show notes get updated, and the show's released. All of that should be automated. So the idea is that we're going to have mixed down profiles, so that once you mix down something, you can kick something else into action. That might be updating an RSS feed. When I went around doing talks about podcasting, everybody said, yeah, I'm really interested in podcasting, but I don't understand how this RSS business works and the hosting side of things. It confuses me. The idea with this is that you'll have a mixed down profile called podcast. And this will be a little extension that you chuck into Jacocia, and it will just do it for you. This is planned. This is going into the next version. This is actually being coded at the moment. Because in Jacocia, we support extensions. So the idea, and I'm going to demo, I'm going to do a demo of Jacocia in a second. And we support very similar to Firefox extensions. So people can make little examples, you know, little scripts that do specific things that are interesting to them. More documentation. We've set up a documentation site and a user documentation site. So people can write documentation in the community, and we're building a community around Jacocia. So we've got some Jacocia forums. We've got a forum there so people can post finished work, the stuff that they've recorded in Jacocia, things that so other people can offer comments, general help and things like that. Building a real community around it, which I'm particularly interested in. But this is the really interesting thing. This is going to be 1.1 or 1.2 network instruments. If you want to record an interview over voice over IP, right now it's a real bodge. It's a real bodge to do it. Whereas with things like telepathy and Farsight, in fact that we're using GStreamer, this all becomes much more easy. So the idea is that in Jacocia 1.1, you'll be able to add an instrument to your project called Internet Phone. And when you add that, you can go to the, we have a dialog box for recording inputs. And instead of listing the inputs in your sound card, you'll be able to select a contact from your buddies list. So you select the contact, and then it goes back to the main view, and then you'll be able to initiate the call. That'll call that person, and they'll start, the connection will be made, so you'll be able to talk to them. And then when you press the big red recording button, it'll record the call in sync with the people who are in the studio with you. This is all technically possible. And this is going to be one of the first major uses of kind of like the telepathy, Farsight kind of stuff. And the fact that we're using GStreamer makes all of this possible as well. So the idea is that you'll be able to host conversations with other people directly inside Jacocia. The other thing that we're going to be working on is the idea of batch processing. So like if David Maley had a Jacocia running, I could record a track, I could get our Jacocias to talk to each other. So I could record a track, a guitar track. When I finish recording it, I could press a button, it'll send that data to David, and it'll sync our two Jacocias together, then he could maybe record his bass line, and then he'd press a button, it would sync our two together and send me it. So that means that we can collaborate on music without having to resort to recording over the internet, which always adds loads of latency. So the plan is that it's not just a singular tool, it's going to be a collaborative tool that lots of people work on. So, that's pretty much it. Do you want to see a demo?
Yes.
Okay, cool. Now hopefully this is going to work. Okay. Now, my laptop's playing up, and it's so the resolution's crap, okay? So this window is nowhere near as big as this. It won't be nowhere near as big as this on your system. So first of all, let's create a new project. Each time we release Jacocia, we have a new open source musician in the new project dialog box. The first time we had the legendary J5 from the GNOME community, and we put him in there. And this is a guy called Brad Sucks. He does actually suck. Okay. Anyone want to suggest a comedy project name?
Crap.
Okay, so this is the Jacocia window. Just ignore that. Okay. So this is the Jacocia window, which works on the screen fully. We've got little zoom buttons in the corner, little zoom slider. And as you hover over bits and pieces, I'll add an instrument first. So let's first of all add an instrument. So first jobs first, there's lots of different instruments supported by Jacocia. So can you guys see this? Am I in the way? So these are the different instruments that we've got so far. And these are easy to add. It's basically an icon and a little text file saying what it is. But with that information, we can associate lots of things with those instruments. So let's say I'm going to add an audio file. So this adds an instrument to my audio file. And then in here, I'm going to, first of all, I'm going to import something. So right click and then import. Now, while this is important that you can play it. That's right. Feel the metal. Okay, so while that's playing, so I'm going to play it again, and then I'll show these two. So, you can see the waveform there, which is really nice.